Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another one of our live episodes of The Breakdown. It is Sunday, December 4th, 2022. We have to say the dates now because things happen so very quickly for reasons that are entirely outside of any sane justification. We're going to have us a bit of a night tonight. We're going to be talking about some things. There's been a lot. We did our last show on Wednesday already. There are some, developments in Alberta politics, and that's what we're here to talk about tonight. But one of the things that we have to talk about to start with is a story that CBC ran earlier this week. So they just posted this on November 30th. And what they talk about is the fact that at the Coutts border protest, blockade, insurrection, borderline terrorist attack. There was a lot of moving pieces. Now, unquestionably, there were a lot of Albertans there and other people who had showed up because they were frustrated by vaccine mandates. They had been, there's many people who have been radicalized by the rhetoric that's been used by a lot of people. And there's really no doubt that there was a good portion of folks there who were believing that they were part of some sort of let's go democratic thing. But the reality is there was a lot of other stuff going on, and this is what the CBC story is about. So CBC talks about the fact that there's four men who have been charged with some very violent crimes and the intention to commit some very violent crimes, allegedly. He said, because he's a good poodle. But what has come out is that it wasn't just these four guys. Apparently, there were, and we'll go with air quotes, bosses who were hanging out in the background. And these bosses were people who were giving orders. They were people who were giving instructions. If this is starting to sound like a bit of an organized attempt to cause real harm, you're probably thinking that for reasons that aren't exactly right. As per the CBC article, these men trained for months. They believed that they were at the pretty much the end times. They were preppers, and they were getting ready for the collapse of society. Some of the language that they used to describe the violence that they wanted to inflict on police officers that's reported in the CBC story is unbelievably graphic. And this is really, really important. And it's not just because these guys did some really, frankly, dumb, but also profoundly dangerous things. It's really important because this is what dangerous rhetoric does. This is what hyperbolic rhetoric does, especially at a time where people are more vulnerable, let's say, because of, I don't know, a pandemic, to becoming increasingly radicalized. This is where it's incumbent on people who are in, I don't know, elected leadership positions, like, I don't know, an MLA, perhaps a associate minister, to not use hyperbolic rhetoric and, I don't know, compare the opposition party to the Nazis. There's no question that when Shane Getson made those comments in the legislature this week, he thought he was being clever and edgy. But the reality is there are people who hear that rhetoric and they're already primed to believe that sort of thing, to believe that that's an accurate description, that there are parallels there. There's techniques of persuasion that are being utilized, whether or not they're intentional or unintentional, doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, they are quite frankly dangerous. And the story of these four men and their bosses, who are apparently still under investigation, this is an incredibly critical story for that. Because if things had gone just a little bit different, if the RCMP hadn't been able to move in the way that they did, that situation could have had profoundly tragic outcomes on a lot of different sides. This is the environment that we exist in Alberta, and the stakes are incredibly high. Perhaps one of the best places where we can see that, last week, this picture of this trailer started making the rounds, and it got people's attention, because that's a trailer that's being parked outside of the Alberta Children's Hospital in Calgary, Alberta. Now, it was the AHS confirmed at the time that, yep, no, we did indeed put a trailer there, and we put it there because there's so many kids coming to our emergency room, we don't have enough room for them and their parents. For anybody who hasn't been paying attention, there is a pediatric healthcare crisis going on in the province right now, and it's incredibly, incredibly bad. Not only are we parking trailers outside of emergency rooms, which is, to be clear, really, really bad. But this week, things took an incredibly, I'm going to say dark and tragic turn when it was announced that the Rotary Flames House was going to have their staff pulled and the Rotary Flames House was going to be shut down with services moving to the Children's Hospital because they needed the staff at the Children's Hospital. They are that overwhelmed. There is that big of a healthcare staffing shortage. But it gets even more tragic because not only are they closing the Rotary Flames House, they're also shutting down something called, depending on how you pronounce it, respite or respite services. Now, you might be wondering what respite or respite services are. Basically, when there's kids who are profoundly medically complex, they often require an extremely high level of care, not only from caregivers, but from parents and family. And it can become an all-consuming thing. And that gets into a really psychologically dangerous place for the parents. It gets into a really psychologically dangerous place for the kids. It can be toxic for relationships. It's a bad situation for people to be in. So what respite or respite care is when basically the kids and the parents get a break. And it can come in all kinds of different forms. But it ensures that there's no burnout that exists with parents or the primary caregivers, which is critically, critically important when dealing with medically complex kids. That's all being canceled. It's all being deferred for the time being for anyone who's not absolutely critical. This is not okay. The fact that the province of Alberta is currently having to say to parents and sick and dying kids, we can't provide those services for you now because things are so overwhelming, is absolutely heartbreaking. I've said it many times on the show before, and I'm going to continue to say it. The measure of any society is how well we treat our weak and our infirm. Infirm meaning sick. Well, we're shitting the bed. Because if we're turning away parents and kids who need supports because we can't get this respiratory virus situation under control. There are many different viruses circulating. The two big ones that we've heard about a lot in the news are, of course, COVID, but we're also hearing a whole lot about RSV, which is a respiratory virus. And there's a lot of kids who get RSV. It's not a big deal. A lot of kids do get it, and it can be extraordinarily bad. And I say this from personal experience because my eldest child was actually hospitalized for almost a week when he was smaller. Because he got RSV, he got a pneumonia, and he had something called a pleural effusion. And if he hadn't been able to get into a hospital, he would have had a much more tragic outcome. That's how serious these viruses can be. We're also seeing influenza ripping through communities, especially hitting kids. This is a very real problem, and it's one that Alberta Health Services has confirmed. This isn't internet speculation. This isn't hyperbole. This is real. And it's incredibly tragic. And the government continues to do, well, you already all know the answer to this, pretty much nothing. Well, that's not true. The health minister did weigh into the pediatric health arena for a little bit when he appeared at the Alberta Children's Hospital for Kids for hosting Candy Cane Gala. So he went to a charity gala to support the Alberta Children's Hospital, which is feels like to me, speaking only for myself, feels like less than the very, 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 very bare minimum. When we know that there are measures that can have very, very quick impact on the situation that the provincial government is simply not choosing because they're concerned about the effects of masks on kids. Sick kids, dying kids are not getting the care that they should be getting. And the provincial government is not doing anything because they're worried about the kids. Now, moving on from there, one of the other things that came up this week, there's some new polling data. Leger released a new poll, or Ledger, if you want to pronounce it that way. They released a poll. And it's getting close. 338, which is a website that makes projections based on those. And 338 tends to be quite accurate. I hate to say it, but it's true. 338 released a bunch of information on it. And they've got right now, the odds of the NDP winning a majority government are sitting at 54%. This is before the Danny Bucks that are eventually coming out. This is before all of the affordability supports come out. And one of the things that was included in that Leger poll is how many people think that the affordability measures that Ms. Smith and team have introduced are less to do with making lives better and more to do with buying votes. Well, an overwhelming majority recognize it's about buying votes. So that's an interesting little piece. Sticking with the statistics and the data, this was one tweet that got my attention in a big way. Comes from Robson Fletcher, who is like one of the best data. We have a couple of journalists in this province who just crush the data munching. Robson Fletcher is absolutely one of them. And he put out this tweet where he talks about the fact that we are seeing a massive decline in journalists in the province, well, across Canada, but particularly in the province of Alberta. Journalists, real journalists, important journalists are dropping like flies. Now, I want to be really clear, and I know that we've said this many times before. It's on the bio. For some reason, we have to keep repeating it. It makes me sad because one would think with the tone and content that we produce, it would be obvious. We're not journalists. We don't claim to be journalists. We don't want to be mistaken for journalists. The content that The Breakdown produces is acerbic commentary. It's punditry. We try to facilitate conversations for sure, but at no point have we ever claimed to be journalists. And the reason for that is the amount of work and research and diligence that journalists exercise, real journalists exercise, the work that they put in to ensure that they are being as impartial and as fact-based as possible. The importance of that cannot be understated. It's been said many times. The foundation of any effective democracy, any healthy democracy, is a well-informed electorate. One of the key pieces of that is real journalism. And there are some amazing, amazing real journalists out there who are doing incredible work to try to keep Albertans, Canadians informed. But unfortunately, one of the other things is, as much as here at The Breakdown, we bend over backwards to try to make sure that you know that we're not journalists, there's no shortage of organizations that don't practice journalism. They're media. And that's okay. But when media starts to represent itself as journalism, we get ourselves into a really big problem. South Park is media. It's commentary. I've never not once seen an episode of South Park broadcast under the heads of Tonight's News or We're Pretending to Be Journalists or anything like that. South Park is satire. And on a good day, that's what we aspire to be here. But it really can't be understated how important it is to support real journalists. That's one of the reasons anytime at the breakdown we stumble across something that doesn't appear to have been published, we immediately reach out to one of the journalists that we have connections with and say, hey, we found a thing, hot potato. It's the responsibility of the people who consume media to make sure that they're holding people to account. Because the reality is, unfortunately, there are news organizations out there who claim to be impartial, some of whom have the ear of the Premier of Alberta on a regular basis, some of whom, in many ways, have been almost the exclusive outlet for interviews and the inside scoop on what's going on with the Premier of Alberta. But they're not journalists. They're media. They're doing commentary. But they're not journalists. And this is why we said it earlier in this week. I'm going to say it again tonight. If you got a chance, reach out, thank a journalist, because they are so much of what we do is just commentary on the incredible work that Alberta journalists do. So I could probably go on about that for a very long time. We're not journalists. Thank you, real journalist, because they're awesome. Moving on from there, let's talk about the Alberta Sovereignty Act within a United Canada, worst acronym ever. Rough week for the Sovereignty Act. Introduced in the legislature this week, almost immediately started to experience drama on the high seas. We saw the NDP say, nuh-uh. We're calling a division. We don't want this bill in here. And then they all voted against first reading, which, as we talked about on our last episode, is merely the agreement to accept the idea that the bill should be introduced and examined. We need to acknowledge the fact that it didn't even get that. It wasn't the NDP were like, nope, it's garbage, shouldn't even be read. And as it turns out, there's a lot of validity behind that statement, because the bill is an absolute train wreck. As you saw on the last slide there's been a lot of concern about the economic instability that it's going to create because of the way that the bill has been written. Now, Daniel Smith and Team UCP immediately tried to do a little bit of counterspin, and they said, hey, guys, it's totally cool. Look, we found these two people, and they said nice things about our bill. Please ignore all of the constitutional scholars. Please ignore all the legal experts who are saying there's major, major problems with this bill. We got these two guys. It's super cool, right? Well, I mean, super cool, problematic, six of one, half dozen of the other, because one of the experts that they cited is an Ottawa human rights lawyer who has represented the convoy working for the JCCF, the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. And if that name sounds familiar, it should, because one of the things that we talked about for a very, very long period of time was Daniel Smith's little GoFundMe. Some of you might remember a little while back, Daniel Smith started up a GoFundMe so she could sue people into allowing alternative treatments for COVID, cough, horse paste cough, as well as allowing greater access to vaccines that were limited because of supply chain issues. So suing the government wouldn't have accomplished anything. But that's what she wanted to do. Obviously didn't go anywhere, because neither of those things are things. The vaccine that she wanted to see more availability was made more availability as the supply chain issues were resolved. And oddly, she couldn't find any doctors that wanted to come forward and say, yeah, all the batshit crazy stuff, totally do it. It'll work out fine. She couldn't find the doctors for that. So what she did, Joe, was she contacted a legal firm and said, hey, legal firm, would you guys be so kind as to make sure that this money all gets dealt with properly? Took a really long time to get answers for that. And fun fact, as much as everybody in the province, it seems these days, is blocked by the Premier of Alberta on Twitter, it was when we asked Danielle Smith, hey, what happened with all that money, Danny, that she blocked us. So that's not at all telling. Turns out, after the law group took some legal fees and they did some exploratory stuff. The bulk of the funds were then donated to the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms, which is a charity. It's a nonprofit. So Danny gets a tax receipt, presumably, for however much money she donated to the JCCF, which should, in theory, mean that she doesn't have to pay income tax for, I don't know, the next 30 years or something like that, because the accounts of how much were actually donated to the JCCF range anywhere from $60,000 to $90,000. So that's totally on the up and up and legit. Anyways, lawyer guy was a lawyer for the JCCF. Huh, he said, totally unambiguously. But the bill had even more, let's go with challenges. So one of the things that we have to talk about is and we're going to do this chronologically again, because that seems to be the way that things make most sense. On Thursday, there was a press conference where two ex-UCP leadership candidates, Brian Jean and Rajan Sawhney, were talking about, well, I think they were trying to make an announcement about a new food processing company that's going to be expanding their role in Alberta, so yay economy or something. But the conversation quickly steered away from that and got much more into, let's say that it had more to do with, their position on the Sovereignty Act.
Start off by saying that it's no secret that I was adamantly opposed to a previous version of the Sovereignty Act, but I'll have to say that myself and my cabinet and caucus colleagues, we certainly were not shy about providing our feedback and about wanting to see certain changes in Bill 1. And Premier Smith has been wonderful in terms of taking our feedback and really listening, and she has incorporated those changes. The rule of law is going to be upheld. There's a lot of misinformation about Bill 1 out there. I would encourage everyone to read the information page that walks people through the step-by-step process as to how this bill will work. If there is something deemed to be harmful to Alberta's interests or unconstitutional, a resolution can be put forth by a minister that has to be then brought to the House, to the Legislative Assembly, and it's debated upon. And at that point, all MLAs have free votes to vote on that motion as to whether they believe in the viability of it, if it's truly accomplishing what we want to see in terms of pushing back against harmful policies, and only then can anything happen thereafter. So it sounds a little bit complex, but I think the more we talk about it and the more we investigate it and have curiosity around how it's going to work, the more the narrative will be correct as we talk to Albertans.
Now, there's a whole lot to unpack. To be clear, that was a couple of clips that were edited together because the whole press conference is like 30 minutes and nobody wants to listen to 30 minutes of that. But there were some salient details that we felt it was important to kind of pull out of there and talk about. So to start with, let's be curious. Let's take Miss Sawhney's advice. Let's take a look at some of that government-produced information that explains how the bill's supposed to work. There's a couple of them out there. The one that struck us most, being that we're talking about the flow of things, was this one right here. This is produced by the government of Alberta to explain how the act will be used. And it basically walks through that same process that Ms. Sawhney talked about right there. So there will be a motion for a resolution. So somebody in the cabinet co says, hey, we're gonna do something about the bad thing that Ottawa did or is doing, because again, the bill is retroactive. There's then a debate and the legislature votes on, well, did they do the bad thing? There's like 10 of the 87 MLAs who are lawyers. I'm not sure that there are any constitutional scholars per se, but they're going to, instead of the courts, speaking of that rule of law piece, determine what's constitutional and what's not. There's the first major problem, because those decisions are supposed to be made by the courts. But now we're going to have elected officials, MLAs, some of whom have no legal background whatsoever, some of whom have questionable legal interpretation. We'll get to that in just a sec, who are going to be making this decision. Then cabinet's going to make a decision. And this is where it gets really, really important, because looking at that government produced, we have not altered this piece of information because we're curious. We're getting into it. Cabinet can then make amendments. Cabinet, working with any with the relevant minister, can amend any enactments. Now, enactment is kind of a broad word. Basically, it means anything that the government does. So when they do a thing, it's called an enactment. It's an extraordinarily broad, and that makes it extraordinarily dangerous term. So, cabinet working with the relevant minister can amend any enactments, including legislation, orders, or regulations. It's right there on the government-produced infographic that cabinet, with no oversight, could be able to change legislation. But there was one other thing that that kind of stuck out a little bit about the minister's comments, and that had to do with the idea that there would be a free vote. There's going to be a free vote. Anytime that there's one of these things, there's going to be a free vote. We actually looked at the bill, and we tried to do the little searchy thing that you do with the PDF where you say, hey, what is, I'm looking for this term, free vote. Couldn't find it anywhere. So we went through and we actually pulled up the whole section of the bill where it talks about how does this happen? Because one of the things that was kind of bothering us was the idea that, you know, we've heard a lot of people say that with Danielle Smith's giant cabinet, that gives her control over a disproportionate number of votes, because those cabinet votes are whipped votes. They have to vote the way that she says. So surely, if the minister, Rajan Sawhney, was saying that there was going to be a free vote, that would be included in the legislation. That's the kind of fine detail that one wouldn't want to leave out, except they did. It's not in there anywhere. There are no guarantees of any kind that suggest that there would be any kind of a free vote. So, to be clear, Rajan Sawhney stood up in front of everybody and said, you know what, guys, I had some concerns about the bill before. It sounded kind of separatist-y, but now we've changed the title, so it's cool, and I think the rest is great. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that is, in effect, what she said. So let's see what Brian Jean had to say, given that we know that the bill disregards the rule of law because it leaves the determination for what's constitutional not up to the courts. It takes it away from the courts and puts it with MLAs. And given that it's given the power, clearly, by the government's own materials that they produced, it's given them the power to change legislation with absolutely no oversight. What does, oh, by the way, ex-lawyer Brian Jean think of all of this?
To go back to the drawing board on the Alberta Sovereignty Act?
Thanks for the question. No, in fact, we've been on the drawing board for a while, and I will tell you that we had some good frank discussions and a lot of hard work that went into drafting this bill. But the government's always open, and that's why it's up to the will of the House on what bill passes and in what form it passes. So every individual member has an opportunity to speak to the bill or to speak about the bill and to provide suggestions if necessary. But I don't see any amendments necessary. I think it's a great bill. I think it stands up for Albertans and Alberta businesses, and I think that's what I'm hearing mostly from Albertans, that they want a government and a provincial government that sticks up for them and their industries. And that's what this bill does.
Seems like Brian's pretty clear. His experience as a member of parliament, his experience of an MLA, his experience as the leader of a party, his experience presumably as a lawyer, all leads him to the conclusion that, hey, you know what? Bill's fine. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here. No changes required. No amendments needed. Everything's good. There's no problems here. Except as we worked our way through the week, there were indeed problems. Got two clips that I want to play for you from Danielle Smith's Your Province, Your Premier that she did yesterday.
Freaking out because the sovereignty bill includes giving unilateral powers to ministers to rewrite legislation without due process. Now, we discussed this earlier in the show, but if you could just go over that again, Premier Smith.
Yeah, I think that there is some confusion on that. And so we're working on some amendment to make it clear. The way I know it's getting a bit into the weeds and it's a little bit into sausage making, but the way laws normally work is that the legislature debates a statute, they pass it, and then they give the power to the cabinet to go and do ministerial orders and write regulations and give directives and make policy changes. But I think where it's unclear is if there was any change to legislation, it has to come back to the legislature. So if we need to clarify that in an amendment, we're going to do that next week.
Basically, what Danielle Smith says in that clip on the Your Province, Your Premier bit is that, you know what? We didn't mean to do it that way. It's not supposed to be like that. We're gonna introduce some amendments in order to clarify that, because of course we wouldn't want anybody just writing laws or changing laws without any kind of oversight. That would be super terrible and bad. So I guess Brian's analysis wasn't exactly bang on. Going to play another clip here for those of you that are watching on the live streams sections. And if you're on the Twitter machines, I'm going to tell you there is a option to, we are streaming live to Twitter as well. So if you can't hear the videos, then what you can always do is go to our profile. You'll find the live stream there, and then you'll be able to see and watch the videos and pop back to the Twitter spaces with any comments that you have there, because I have no idea why the audio on those things isn't working. But we're going to get into that other clip right here, because while it doesn't have a whole lot to do with the Sovereignty Act piece, it does highlight a couple of things, because Smith has said and not said at varying times that on one hand, she really, 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 really wants to only wants to have to use the Sovereignty Act as a last measure. Hopefully we never have to use it. But on the other hand, she said, you know what, we're already looking at things that we're going to have to use it for. And the two examples that she used on the Your Province, Your Premier were the examples of the alleged increase to the decrease on fertilizers, as well as the carbon tax. So here's that clip.
Things that I think are most important when I say I have to protect people for the future is the federal government has talked about having an emissions cap on fertilizer that would force our farmers to reduce fertilizer use by 30%, and an emissions cap on oil and gas that would force our oil and natural gas producers to reduce their emissions 42%, both by 2030. Now, I've talked to Sonia Savage, our environment minister, who also happens to be a lawyer. And here's what she says. If you have an emissions cap and you don't have the technology to achieve it and you don't have the time frame to be able to achieve it, it is a de facto production cap. I feel very much as you do, Pete, that our entrepreneurs are amazing, and especially in this province. And the amount of innovation that I've already seen on reducing emissions over the last 5 years, it is such a good news story. And young people should feel proud and confident of what we are doing, because if we are able to capture emissions and then either store them underground or embed them into useful products, if we're able to start building out a hydrogen economy so that you're able to power your transportation vehicles with hydrogen and reduce emissions, if we're able to get LNG to market and reduce emissions globally so that the world has cleaner fuel, so they're not having to use coal and wood and other polluting fuels, that's a good news story. As for fertilizer, I mean, this is the point of pushing back, right? Is that they come out with these outlandish policies and then they suggest that they want to have these rapid timeframes. And if they come through with legislation to force it, we have to be prepared to put up that constitutional shield. This is the reason why we have these conversations, is so that they realize, gee, we can't get away with that. Because Saskatchewan pushed back just as hard on the fertilizer cap as we did. But I am not. I'm watching what's happening in Europe. I am watching what's happening in particular in the Netherlands, where they are now talking to their farmers about confiscating their property if they do not reach 60% emissions reduction targets. And make no mistake, if they want to do that in Europe, the federal government is watching that too. They are going to get away with as much as they think they can get away with. And that is why we have to put up the constitutional shield.
So to be clear, we have at the beginning of that clip, for those of you who are sticking around through the Twitter, thank you so much. And I don't know why. I can't even, apparently people can't even request to be speakers right now. So I don't fully understand what's going on with Twitter Spaces tonight. But one of the things that, Danielle Smith says in there is, oh, you know what, if they go ahead with these emissions and we don't have the ability to reduce our emissions ourselves, it's a de facto production cap. So they're trying to decrease our production. And then immediately pivots to, we are doing the best emissions reduction. We have entrepreneurs who are all over the emissions reduction. It should be a global story how much we're crushing emissions reduction. Those two points are totally contradictory. Now, the second part that you heard there was Danielle Smith talking about the proposed fertilizer reduction. Now, a caller had called in, and props to that caller because they did a bang-up job of getting Smith to admit, yeah, the fertilizer reduction is voluntary. It's not mandatory. There's been no discussion about making it mandatory. It's voluntary. And so what Danielle Smith says is, well, yeah, you know, but in the Netherlands, they're threatening to take away people's tractors. And if I know Trudeau, and boy, I know Trudeau, he's gonna do the same thing. So we have to protect people's tractors in a hypothetical situation. That's what we need, this act that ignores the rule of law, that by her own admission needs to be drastically amended. That's what we need it for. The imaginary boogeyman that there's no evidence that it exists. It's pretty stunning. Because here's what the options are. Either Danielle Smith and all the MLAs, including Rajan Sani and Brian Jean, who said, you know what, we had a lot of discussions about the act. We all knew it was going to be in the act when it was introduced on the floor of the legislature this week. And boy, it's a great act. We've got its back. We believe in it. Either they actually believed all of that, and they didn't realize that they were violating the rule of law, and they didn't realize that they were violating the Constitution. They were giving themselves insane powers with almost no oversight. And it's really important to realize here, even if you're like one of the team UCP folks and you're like, you know what, I know Shandro, he doesn't have a temper, it'll be fine if he's able to write his own laws. Even if you believe that, this piece of legislation would be existing for the next government as well. And if that happens to be the NDP, if you're not comfortable with them having that weapon in their arsenal, you shouldn't be comfortable with anybody having that weapon in their arsenal. Certainly without any oversight. So that's one choice. They totally knew what they were doing, and they just thought it would be okay, which reveals a stunning lack of understanding of all of the things. Or they didn't know. Danielle Smith didn't show them the bill and we're just getting talking points. Or they thought they could get away with it. None of those options are great. And if anybody has any other options, please send put a comment on the thing, the Spaces thread, because apparently we can't have speakers tonight. I don't know. Thanks, Elon. But if you do want to be a speaker, we've already got one person who said that they want to share some thoughts in a bit. We'll send you an invite because apparently that method still works. Yeah, that's where we are. And then we get to this morning, because this morning, just in case there was any confusion, because there were a few folks yesterday who were like, you know what? She didn't mean it about the amendments. We've had more than a few folks coming on our Facebook and our Twitter today saying, no, you heard the our province, our premier wrong. Well, Danielle Smith went on Global this morning and she had some more thoughts to share.
Oh, I have to be honest with you, I was a little bit surprised when I saw this bill, knowing your background and some of your more libertarian tendencies, that you would write a clause into this that allows cabinet to unilaterally make changes. Why is that in the bill, and are you seriously considering taking that out?
Well, I think the intention of the bill was to make sure that everything was validated through the legislature. It's why we've taken the process of, if there is a motion that would need to come forward that would assert provincial jurisdiction, that it would be debated first in the legislature. I understand there's a problem with one of the clauses. People have raised some concerns about it. So we're taking a look at that. If we need to tidy a few things up, then we'll do that, because the intention has always been to make sure that that anything that we do, any action that we take, has been fully debated by those who are represented to represent the interests of the people of Alberta. And if that's being misconstrued or it's not clear, then we can certainly work to clarify that. I'm taking feedback on it, and we'll see if we need to do anything to tidy it up next week.
Which is a fascinating position to take, because it's kind of that, hey, you know what, you guys, if you don't get it, if you don't understand what I'm trying to do, what I'm trying to say, you know, we'll try to slow down for you, I guess. We'll issue some clarifications if we have to. But that was, boy, that was never the intent. And one would think that you would have to know that the term enactment means and includes not only just the regulation, but the legislation. Let's ask, the Premier of Alberta.
Like, more than basic housekeeping, that seems pretty major. If you had a clause that says cabinet can unilaterally change it, and now you're saying no, it's the legislature. I mean, the legislature has always had the rule of passing bills. What was remarkable about this is that it allowed cabinet to alter it after it had passed the legislature without being voted again on MLAs. So, you know, did you ever intend on using this? Was it a political statement? Is it just that you're rushing this through? How does something that big, that's inaccurate, if that's what you're saying, end up in a bill?
Well, I guess the thing is, enactments take two forms. I mean, we're getting a bit into the weeds, but you know how you have statutes and you also have regulations. It's pretty understood that cabinet has the ability to do ministerial orders, to make changes in regulation, to do directives, to make changes in policy. I think we just have to be very clear that any statutory change has to return to the legislature. That was always the intention. If that's not clear, then I may have to just make some amendments to make sure that it's underscored.
If you look at the front of Bill 1, it doesn't define enactment as being only regulation. And Danielle Smith in that clip clearly states herself, well, enactments can take the form of regulation and statutes, which is the $5 word for laws. What does it say in the bill that ministers can mess with? Enactments, including laws. Because if we go back to that little piece that the government produced explaining what cabinet could do, they can amend any enactments, including legislation, orders, or regulation. The wording in the bill is enactments. It's not regulation. It's enactments. They use the broadest term possible. And the idea that this was somehow done on accident because all of the lawyers that were presumably involved in the drafting of this bill, including the cabinet ministers that claimed that they reviewed it, some of whom are, by many reports, lawyers or ex-lawyers, none of them thought, maybe we should be a little bit more specific. So that's Bill 1 up until today. Theoretically, we may not see some amendments coming from Team Smith and the UCP. It will be fascinating to see how all of the MLAs who stood up and said, nah, it's fine, especially Brian Jean, who said it absolutely does not require any amendments. It's a good bill. I get behind it. Brian Jean and Rajan Sawhney are two of the ministers, two of the leadership candidates who held a special press conference during the UCP leadership race to say, we got problems here. This is not okay. And boy, oh boy, they turned into good poodles real, real quick. One can't help but wonder if Brian Jean is going to stand up in front of a camera and say, there's no amendments required. And Rajan Sani is going to say, it'll be a free vote. How can it possibly be a free vote? Because those two and many other UCP MLAs are already towing the line in a big way. And it's only just in its first reading. We're going to move on from there, though, because we got some other stuff to talk about. And we got a couple folks who are going to be joining us tonight. I'm going to bring in somebody who's been on the show a couple of times before to help us navigate our first topic. And it is an absolute privilege. I love having conversations with this guy. Don Slater is joining us now to have a conversation, because one of the things that people are happy about is the fact that with these affordability measures, people on AISH are finally going to get re-indexed? How do I say that, Don?
I guess you'd say re-indexed.
Okay, so we don't add the second re for the second time that it's been a thing now?
No, well, could be re. I don't know. I was just pondering everything you just said, and I'm trying to remain unbiased. Thanks a lot for that.
I make it easy, don't I? Like, in no way do I present anything that could be in any way.
I wish my backbone was a slinky too. So that's.
I hope that's not directed at me.
No, it's not. It's. I'm trying to remain a person that the UCP can reach out to, if only the last person. So I'm doing my best to remain unbiased and not fall to one side or the other, even though political pressures would push me more to the left than the right, you know, prevailing winds, whatever you want to say. I hope that the wisdom of the crowd and all the people in the middle come out and vote.
Okay.
And well, anyway, go ahead with your questions about AISH.
We're gonna bring in, after we have the AISH conversation, we're gonna bring in my good friend Sarah Biggs, and she's gonna help us make sense of all of the things that I just ranted about, hopefully with a little bit more of a dispassionate lens than the one that I tend to bring to the table. But I want to hear it from you. What's going on with AISH?
Well, the indexing that they offered was only from October of last year to September of this year. So would have been 21 to 22. That was 6.2%, which brought AISH up to $1,787. If you went back to the day it was de-indexed, that would be 12.2%, which would have brought it up to $1,887. But with this $100 that they're including for anti-inflation measure, their 6-month bribe, as you called it, which might be extremely accurate, it's 1887. So it's a total, it's a dollar off if they would have. So I'm happy for the disabled community in that regard for the next 6 months. It's not as high as it should be yet, but nobody's ever established a mission statement in Canada that says this is the standard we should achieve. And I think that's why the UCP always points at other provinces that are substandard and says we're doing better than them. There's nothing that they can be measured against, maybe the UN declaration, but nobody's ever said that we should achieve this measure of well-being in Canada. This is what we have to shoot for, and therefore this is what we have to protest for. So I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. That's basically the way I'm looking at it. I can't be an individual and express my feelings about things, because there's a lot of people that are really hurting. I've said to my community, let's not be angry. It's okay to be disappointed, but don't be mad, because there's people outside freezing right now. So there's a lot of people in this world feeling the crush, and there's a lot of problems going on, and your shirt is exactly accurate in summing up the world right now. The dumpster fire is burning. It's raging away. I'd say there's more than one dumpster going, though. It's like the whole dump is probably Bernie. Yeah, and that's just about it. The biggest thing they could do that doesn't really cost them anything right now is to change the dates back to before the end of the month. That was a silly change that I do understand that there are some people that have problems managing the money, but that was the excuse. That wasn't the reason. And I think there was a lot of unforeseen consequences to changing the dates. So the next thing I'd like to see is please change the dates back to a couple of days before the end of the month. Bigger issues might be spousal benefits and EI. They haven't addressed those at all. Somebody pointed out that every time there's an election, the political parties raise age. So I'm hoping for two or three elections per year until we get to the level that we need to be. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes.
Let's talk a little bit about that date change, just so that anybody who's listening right now who maybe doesn't have context on it has the context. When we're talking about the date change, what was it that changed? I already know the answer to that question, but I want to hear it from you, and then I will give my incredibly biased and perspective as to why that date change happened, and then I think we'll probably bring Sarah in.
Yeah, well, we both know why that date change happened, but, you know, I'll be the diplomatic one, and you can be the blunt and honest one, you know. I think diplomacy is just another way of saying presenting the truth in a veiled manner. Anyway... the payment dates used to pretty much align with federal payments, which were several days before the end of the month. This gave a person a chance to go to the bank, do all the banking they needed to do. Let's say they don't do banking online. It gave them the time to cope with obstacles that might be in their path. What the UCP did was they changed the payment date to the first of the month, and the message was sent out to anybody that was answering questions, why did you change this date? Well, there were some people that couldn't budget and they wouldn't have any money for their rent on the first of the month. There were a lot of unintended consequences, and the consequences still occur. There's still people that will receive their payment just a few hours late, and the landlord has taken the rent out of their account, and now there's a late payment. You know, one particular case I heard of, a person got a service animal 10 years ago. They took out pet insurance on that animal. Their payments were set up on the 29th. When they changed the date, their animal was now older. They had to rewrite their insurance policy, and now their animal was old, and their insurance policy was three times as much. You know, these are things that nobody thinks about, and you can't see them until they happen. So, you know, landlord's biggest issue, not having any time. If anything goes wrong, there's no buffer whatsoever. And I can't see it costing the government anything to move the dates back, except for PR. And humanity should never take a backseat to PR. You know, what we're given on age and what disabled people are given on age is really depending on people's humanity versus their cupidity. And like I say, I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. I don't want to judge people. I think there are good people in the UCP. I won't point them out at this particular time because I don't want them to be assassinated for being good people, you know, but, you know, there's good and bad both parties, right? You know, I can think of Chris Nielsen as being an exceptionally good person in the NDP, and he was sort of pushed out the door. So good and bad in both, maybe more bad in one than the other. And I'm probably saying too much if I'm suggesting I want to be unbiased. So anyway, well, I'll look out into space now.
Okay. I'll say the quiet part out loud. The reality is that those date changes were done only, they were A, done without any consultation, and B, they were only done to allow them to play some shenanigans with the provincial budget and move the costs into the out of the current fiscal year that they were in and into the next one. That's entirely what it was. And it was the, to me, it was the most cynical form of accounting, because it was done with no regard for the harm, the real harm that it was going to inflict. And again, like, it just, I know I said this at the top of the show, and I'm probably going to say it 16 times tonight, so I apologize to everyone, but it comes up again and again. If the measure of any society is how we take care of our weak and our infirm, hey, let's make a few dollars look like they moved. And for that, we will screw over a bunch of people. It's not a great look for the measurement of any society. But
well, I must say that I'm shocked, both shocked and stunned by your revelation. This is just news to me.
But you timed it perfectly for when I was taking a drink there, man. That felt like one of the YouTube challenges my kids watch.
Yeah, I do appreciate you referring to Zai Zanzu and the good earth there with how we take care of the most vulnerable in the society. And, you know, I'm also reminded of Steinbeck when he says, if you're down or hurt, you go to the poor people because they're the only ones that will help you. That's paraphrasing, but, you know, it talks about empathy. And I'd sure like to see more politicians that were disabled at one time in their life or are disabled in power. But as you pointed out, there's a lot of lawyers in there. So,
well, some.
What do you? Well, some. Enough. Too many. I don't know. But you
and
know,
the
I
quality
think,
of lawyering that they do certainly appears, yeah, at least this week, to be up to some debate, at least on the UCP side.
Well, I think when our society suffers from polarization, right? And so I'm trying to be calm and in the middle and not be all Facebooky on everybody where I just get angry right away, or I put a laughing emoji after every one of their comments in a dismissive manner.
You're not an all caps guy?
No, not an all caps. You don't call me Don all caps. No, I'm trying to be kinder, sweeter, produce a kinder world and all that stuff. I might be a singular voice out in the wilderness, you know, a wandering hermit, but I'd like to see people do better. I'd like to see their humanity come out. I'd like to see people be good to each other. But, you know, kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya.
On that note, I'm going to bring in Sarah Biggs, and we're going to start to let's have the conversation about, I mean, that was a beautiful note that you hit there, Don, and I have a feeling that we're probably going to take a giant dump all over it over the next half hour, but
I need a kumbaya t-shirt now.
You're more than welcome. You're more than welcome to take a huge dump all over it.
I don't want to, but the reality of the reality is probably going to do some things.
Yeah.
Sarah Biggs, how are you doing?
Oh, you know, trying to train the toddler to sleep in a big girl's bed. My life is doing just fine.
That's never dramatic.
We had to fake that her crib was broken.
Oh, you could have just broken it.
It's broken. No, I just took the mattress out. And I was like, it's broken. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. It's broken. She's two, right? Pretty much on the nose. So, but she was climbing out of her baby prison. So now
I'm going to do it. I have to do it. Can we do that with Bill Bunn and Daniel Smith? Can we just tell her that it's broken and we have to move on now? Can we do that?
No,
I didn't know we were talking about somebody else.
there.
Yeah.
Okay, so Sarah, I know that you were a little bit delayed because of Cribgate. Let's run through the things. So we started off with the appalling story that came out this week from CBC, where they talked about the fact that the four terrorists, I'm going to use the word, were planning to assassinate police officers.
Yeah.
And the story in itself is pretty bad. But when it comes up that they had I don't know, generals, bosses, whatever the word is here. We're getting into dangerous territory, and we have Shane Getson standing up in the legislature and saying, well, you know, the NDP, they occupied the legislature, and they're pretty much Nazis. Why don't we just call them that? We haven't seen much of a response. I mean, Danielle Smith said that she told Shane Getson that she disapproves of his rhetoric, and she would like people to use a higher level of discourse. But there doesn't appear to be any consequences. He's still the minister of wildly ironic titles. What do you make from a comms standpoint? Is let's just let Shane say gross things still? Is that the right strategy?
No. Half my family would like to digress with, you know, what they said. I'm trying to find my candy. I lost my candy.
It's going to be a hard one tonight, folks.
You know, I was at the legislature a lot this week. And the decorum, like, we're going to give this to Mr. Kenny. He kept his caucus in line, like, as much as he could. The discipline was there. Like, no more thumping, no more, you know, everything that we've seen this week. But, man, Shane, like, no, just... No, it's going to be interesting to see. So we're dealing with a government that is, sorry, my cat is trying to bite my feet again. So we deal with a government that is very reactive and not proactive. So I think that we're not going to see, so like everything else that we've seen so far, we're not going to see a lot of dirty laundry in the public. It's all going to be back doors. It's all going to be controlled from the premier's office. There's a lot of people working that office. And I don't know how they're going to be dealing with it. It is extremely shameful that he, you know, resorted to say that tonight. This week, I was like, what? I watched it like 15 times. And, you know, as much as we are polarized and we don't agree, Do not bring the Holocaust and false equivalencies with the Nazis. You just don't do that. You don't. You know, it's what's happening to the missing Indigenous women, to what happened to the Holocaust, to Holodomor. Those are sacrosanct events that you cannot use as a false comparison, and it's extremely shameful. And I would say that it was an uneducated comment from Mr. Getson.
That's a generous interpretation. I would take a slightly more
hard, yeah, dance. I need to watch what I'm saying, but it's
I don't need to watch what I'm saying. It was moronic.
There we go.
It was moronic. It was disgusting. Yeah. It was gross. It was poor judgment. You know, Getson doesn't agree with COVID measures. Fine. I don't care. You do not use. Has he seen the book of Auschwitz? Maybe we should tweet it to him tonight. I don't think Mr. Getson has seen the book of Auschwitz. So I'm sorry. But to compare it to the problems. Yes, some people, I fully understand, you know, the convoys, the nature of the convoys of some people, I understand. They lost their jobs, they lost their houses. Not everybody did well during the pandemic, and it was extremely, extremely difficult. I get that. But there's always a faction that is in there to go throw shit, and it flies against the wall, and stuff like coups happens, where people were just, you know, protesting, but, you know, with pipe bombs, because, you know, that's totally normal. And, you know, the book of the Holocaust in Auschwitz is about 12 feet long. It's thick. And never, ever, ever should we ever use again to compare the pandemic. You know, Nate, unless some, you know.
No, I know.
I'm fuck. We need to go back to decorum, and it's time to grow up. And if Smith wants to have a chance at winning that election, she got Calgary Jewish Association against her back this week. That's going to take a while to repair. She's losing a lot of support right now in Jewish communities and other minority communities as well that have suffered through that. You know, there's the Chippies, then the Romanies that suffered during the Holocaust. It was not just the Jewish people. So, you know, that's maybe I should just send him like Anne Frank journal or something so he can understand what people went through. Like my grandmother immigrated from France to Canada because she ran away from that. She managed to survive. She managed to escape. The rest of my grandma, I don't know my grandmother. My mother's adopted. But we do know that there's a big chunk that passed. You know, in the camps, and we lost a lot of... It's just fucking disgusting. I just can't even anymore. You know, those guys, if they can't speak properly or with some eloquence and decency, just have the back seat. There's a seat that is free already by the plastic blend. Sorry.
And apparently another one coming at the beginning of the week. But, you know, here's the question that I wanted to ask you specifically, Sarah, because you're more familiar with the internal workings of the legislature and that beast. There is some debate as to how much in advance people are aware of what member statements are going to look like. I've seen some people commenting this week that, you know, this was just Shane Getson being Shane Getson, and what are you going to do? I don't think that's a whole other thing to unpack. But is there? I've also seen the argument that people have said, you know what, if he's going to do a member statement, that has to get printed off and run by the caucus folks first. Any truth to that in your experience?
Depends on what. Of course, somebody somewhere, but I don't understand. I'm having a hard time believing that someone in comes okayed that. I'm having a really, really, really hard time thinking that was okayed by the higher office. I, you know, I'm going to be asking some questions this week, and I'm going to be, you know, try to ask what happened. But, you know, I think it was a very last minute inspirational change with the heat of the moment, with very poor and lack of blatant. There's no fucking way that the comms approved that. There's no way. Like, hate them or like them, anyone with a head, and I know the premier's press secretary, I know a few people in comms, and a lot of they're reasonable people.
So why do you think then? Because this is the, I agree with you 100%. And as has been observed on more than one occasion, my personal sense of humor tends to lean a little bit towards the dark side of the things, but there's certain places that even I won't go. Why do you think it is that Smith's condemnation of Mr. Getson's comments has been limited to, I was very disappointed? And why do you think it is that there's no other UCP MLAs or anybody in the UCP camp who said, yeah, that was a bridge too far?
You want my answer?
I sure do.
I don't know.
Can I put in my two cents?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like it's a little bit of Trump's strategy, where he says there's good people on both sides. He doesn't want to upset the fervent supporter or the crazed supporter.
I mean, that's entirely possible because, I mean, you take a look at some of the comments that exist on Mr. Getson's Facebook page and...
vaccine injury, anyone?
Yeah.
Well, or guns, more guns, all of the guns. I'd like some more guns. Can I get some chocolate sauce on my guns, please? Yeah. I would like a padded gun so that I can sleep with it more comfortably. And I'm not saying that those are all Mr. Getson's words by any stretch of the imagination, but those are the unmoderated comments that exist on his Facebook page. And as a public figure, one might think that there would be a... I think you might be onto something there, Don. We have...
I think they probably just decided to keep it short and sweet, because when we've seen that, you know, when the premier starts explaining, sometimes it goes sideways, and they just decided to keep it short and sweet. But I don't know. I'll ask around.
Okay.
I think the government's job is to defend the people from threats, foreign and domestic.
I can't.
But instead,
everywhere tonight.
Yeah. But instead, they're misinforming people and they're producing their own domestic terrorists.
Yeah, clearly. And that's what we saw at the border. Sarah, I want to get into the provincial polling, because, you know, I have some thoughts on the NDP messaging. We saw the new left
don't poll. Be on.
Let's talk about Marjorie. We saw the new Leger polling numbers. You know, the NDP have apparently made some headway in the overall arc of things, but they are neck and neck with the UCP in many regards. And we have not even seen the impact of the real world spending of the Danny Bucks.
No. So, you know, a month ago, I was saying she can catch up her 10% and she's trailing behind. She totally can. You know, last week she won the comms on, you know, the supplemental funding, and, you know, we're 6 months out. Of course she will. Everybody would. So that's one thing that we need to understand. Anyone that would be in power, would be in that situation, would do it. So we need to clear the room on that. It's not a left or right issue. Everybody would try to spend some monies to try to secure the vote of, because there's the hard voters on both sides, but then you get the soft center. So they're undecided, slightly undecided. Some days they're going to UCP, some days. But, you know, think about the family that has four kids that are going to get $2,400 extra. That makes a difference. My daycare fee, well, you know, we're... My daycare fees went up $20. For us, it doesn't make a difference. But for a lot of families, when you have 2-3 kids in daycare, it's $60, if not more, a month, because daycares are struggling with inflation as well. And sometimes you see it in the daycare menu, right? It's weird, but you see it. You notice, like, how they're doing crafts or how they're doing things. You do see that the inflation is hitting everyone hard. Am I frozen?
No, you're working fine on my end.
Okay, weird, because I'm frozen on my end. Okay, so, you know, I'm going to be curious to see what the next Janet Brown polling is going to look like, because Janet is one of the best pollsters hand out in the province. So last time she had the UCP trailing by 10 points. But you know what? I think she can get it still. I don't think it's game over for the UCP. Because no. The NDP is not able to control their messaging in an effective way. The UCP has messaging control. Like, look at Bill 1. Everybody's saying something. Then we have Minister Madhu saying another thing. Then we get a damn flow chart that doesn't make any fucking sense. And then it's like, Jesus Christ. But people will forget about this if the bill is amended, and if it is, like, you know, last week when I was like, you know what, I'm not too worried about it, because a bill like that, there's no way it can be passed. There's no way. She pivoted, like, her interviews, it's her pivoting, and she's really good at pivoting and make it see like, no, we kind of put the most extreme scenario to see if everybody was okay with it. Now we're going to scale it back. So that's their approach to damage control right now. And it makes it look like to the electorate to be like, you know what? We're listening to you. We're hearing you. We're here. We are taking consultations. We are taking feedback. Let's make this work for you. So it's very, very, you know, but the NDP needs to get a grip. They really do. And I'm urging them, you know, both sides of, you know, I'm trying to remain, well, sometimes yeah. I'm biased, but if the NDP want to have, it's not for the UCP to lose this election, it's for the NDP to lose that election, not to win it.
Yeah.
It's not for the UCP to win, it's for the NDP to lose.
Yes, exactly.
If I'm stepping on people's toes, I'm just trying to get in here a little bit.
No.
Yeah, no, jump in.
You can make comments on Aish if you want to, Sarah.
Yeah.
For years I've been going at the NDP, what the hell are you doing? You know, they should be walking away with this election. And if they're concerned about the way people are going to be voting in the future, the NDP can just say that we're going to be even more altruistic. If it's about buying votes before the election, then you can say, well, after the election, we'll even be better to you. We'll extend these programs. We'll do better for you.
So with Aish, just Aish, let's say Aish. Yeah. When I was running Leela's campaign, I costed how much extra it would cost a year to bring Aish to $2,000 a month.
Yeah.
It was $265 million a year.
Yeah.
We're going to be going through probably a massive $21 billion.
It was 0.2%. It's 0.2% of the budget. Yeah. When you're really, you're weighing humanity against empathy versus capitalism. Yeah. It's bullshit.
We can afford to take care of all the vulnerable.
Yeah.
And we should be setting the bar.
Yeah.
Why is Alberta not leading the way and setting up the national standard for Aish?
Yeah.
If we're already that high, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, $200. Yeah. The next issue is reducing costs by building homes for people. You know, instead of throwing money on top.
Before we move to that, Don, I want to ask you a question, and then I want to get Sarah's thoughts on it, because one would think that historically, Aish is sort of more in the NDP's wheelhouse than it would be in the UCP's wheelhouse. And one would think that this is my take, and this is where I want to hear Sarah tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me, if I'm the NDP, and I know that the UCP are going to be giving this increase to Aish, the next words out of my mouth are going to be, well, that's a cute little start that you've got going on there, UCP. But if we were in government, we were going to take it way past that. And if we get elected, that's what we're going to do. How would that sit with you and the people that you are talking with in your community all the time, Don?
Well, you know, I don't want to betray what I know about the NDP, but I know a lot of people in caucus before the last election wanted to raise up Aish to $2,000. And the NDP was afraid of doing that because they thought they'd lose votes for not being economically savvy or something like that, or not saving a buck. Everybody's afraid to spend money, you know, on issues like people with disabilities. And as Sarah aptly pointed out, it's just a trickle. It's just a drop in the bucket. You're talking about doing so much good for so many people for so little expense. Where's the disconnect here? You know, like I said, I sometimes wonder if the NDP brain trust is a turnip in a suit and a tie. Because... it just should be so much better than this. You know, the NDP should be 90% and the UCP should be 10%.
But so, Sarah, is Don right? Is it just that people don't want to feel good about helping the vulnerable? Or is there a political downside to the NDP being able to take ownership of this issue? Because I think
Right now, there's no downside, especially not when we're making money back on the back of a war here. Hand over fist. Or fist over hand.
Hand over fist. I think it's hand over fist.
Which is especially another reason not to mention Nazis, really, at this point.
But, you know, there is no... excuse, if I was the NDP, I would present a budget now and say, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to approach it. This is what you are going to get if you elect us in 6 months. And then you run your messaging on that for the next 6 months. And then you're going to be taking care of inflation. You're going to be introducing housing. You're going to be, but the age program, the disability programs need to stop being stigmatized and being the boogeyman of political platforms. Because if you look back, so I'm going to go back to good old conservative principles. In theory, we're supposed to take care of all vulnerable and our elders. That is one, and I know a lot of people will be disagreeing with me, but that is what one of the bases, it's not Jesus, guns, and babies, guys. That is not what conservatism used to be. Now it's different with a hint of COVID.
You're describing Stelmac.
Yeah, but you need to also, if I was the NDP, I would say if we bring age to, let's say, $2,400 a month, this much, so we're going to be saving this much, we're going to be relieving pressure off the bank programs, we're going to be relieving, you know, other programs because they will be able to afford a pass. They will be, you know, there's a lot of things that will be happening if age is increased. And he can take a NDP policy and then you can take, you can make a conservative and economic argument for it and then make it a conservative policy. That's usually how it works. So if I was the NDP right now, I'd set a number that makes sense, that sets the bar, run a budget, campaign on it.
Yeah.
Well, I think, but they're not capitalizing on it. They're not announcing it. They're not running it. I'm seeing the comments here. There is a plan, yes. But where's the communication?
Well, The warrior mentality has taken over in the NDP, and they think, well, we have to attack, 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 when all they have to do is sit back and let the UCP implode on bad mistakes they're making.
Or do their own thing.
And if they offer a positive alternative, happy, let's move forward, everything's good in the world, that's much more appealing to me as an individual.
They just need to do their own thing. Forget about the UCP.
Yeah, well, like I said, a turn up in a suit with a tie, it's not going to make the best strategy, you know.
But it's like they announced this weekend. They announced this weekend that they were going to vote against every single amendment they're going to be making to Bill 1.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to ask you about that. So, I mean, it seems like the NDP, we'll jump ahead to Bill 1, and then we actually have Ziad on the Twitter Spaces, and it's the Twitter Spaces has been a bloody dumpster fire tonight, but I'm going to see if we can add Ziad into the conversation. But... you know, we saw the NDP, we talked about this last episode, Sarah, we saw the NDP stand up and say, division. And then we saw the NDP say, we don't want this thing to even get, we reject the premise of the bill. And now we have the statement that came forward where the NDP economic development critic, Darren Billis, said he will be holding a news conference. I think he did. He said the NDP will not support any amendments to Bill 1, the Alberta Sovereignty Within a United Canada Act. So the NDP is saying we're not even going to support any amendments, which to me, given that the UCP has a majority government, at least you could have the appearance of, I don't know, standing up for democracy or something. But instead, they're letting the UCP say, oh, we listened, though. It's not that we got our hand caught in the cookie jar. We were testing the cookie jar detector. Turns out it works, everybody. It did exactly what we wanted it to. And the NDP are going to let them have that whole narrative. Am I reading that wrong, Sarah?
So, okay, here. They need to buy a big whiteboard and set out their priorities in order. The Rotary closed this weekend. Palliative care kids are being sent home. And I will tell you guys, when you deal with palliative care, the complexities of palliative care on the psychological aspect, on the medical aspect, on comfort aspect, on grieving, on acceptance, is extremely, extremely, extremely complicated. The rotary is fucking closed. And the NDP comes out and be like, oh, by the way, we're going to be voting against everything about Bill 1. Try to explain that to your mom who's losing her kid to leukemia right now and they can't get the care and they're going to be struggling with home care or they just fucking cannot afford it. Like, seriously, they need to set up their... Nobody gives a shit about them not voting in favor of any amendments of Bill 1 because the amendments will be going through no matter what. The only ones that make an impact right now is the public. The public is making an impact on Bill 1, not the NDP. That's probably going to get me scrapped from the NDP for a while. But they need to realign their priorities and they need to seriously think about what kind of government they want to become. Because it's one thing to say, we're going to be more compassionate. We're going to be more this. We're going to be more that. Do something. Stop poking it with a goddamn stick. Do something.
Sarah,
their
Think voices like yours really need to come to the forefront because I think there's a desire in the NDP to have a singular voice. And when you do that, instead of being a chorus, all you're doing is being an echo. You know, you're just parroting yourself. It's just bouncing back. You're not offering any good ideas. You're not testing your own thoughts. You're not allowing thoughts to be tested and presented to other people. You know, like,
I hope the NDP never listens to me. Good, cool. They probably won't.
They don't listen to me either. They gave me the boot a long time ago for raising my voice up about issues. And
oh no, there, know, it's a comment in the chat. It's probably
eject people.
But it's my job every day.
Paint. Yeah. Well, they eject people for having indigenous paint on their leg or whatever. You know, it's just, it's silly.
I'm just, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll elect you a new premier if you like.
No. Trust me, you don't want me in that chair. You really don't.
Well, you have so much passion and I can see how much this is bothering you and how much empathy
it
you
is
have
bothering
for
me.
You know, you're not placing tactics ahead of humanity. And I see that far too much in the NDP, where they're just, oh, tactical, tactical, tactical. We got to be tactical. You know, add a little bit of humanity into the party and they'll do the right things and that'll come out. It'll be expressed in public how much we care
both
for
parties,
you.
Hmm? Both parties right now need to restream their communication.
Yeah.
And they need to reset them. And start from zero.
I expect better out of the NDP, the party of Tommy Douglas or Jack Layton or something like that. I don't expect them to succumb to Newton's third law or the equal and opposite of the UCP. You know, they can be a lot better than this. You know,
they can be a good centrist party because that's what we need. And right now what's happening is that they are acting like if they won the opposition. And they need to stop doing that. Yeah. They really do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't need to scream and yell. They don't need to scream and yell.
No.
They just have to be reasonable. You know, I was thinking. Nate has this show and he's not allowed to talk. Sorry.
No,
Nate,
it's not that. I'm actually trying to get Ziad in here because I want to know if I can make the sound come out of the Twitter spaces and B, Ziad has nice things to say. So Ziad,
I'm gonna sneeze. I'll be right back.
Are you there, Ziad?
Yes, I am. Thanks for can you hear me? Thanks for fitting me in. Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can't hear Ziad at all. So
I can barely hear him.
Yeah.
If you could crank the volume 300%.
I don't know if I can, to be honest. Let's try some shenanigans here.
Is that any better?
I don't know what's going on with Twitter Spaces. This is the exact same configuration that it had last week. So Ziad, I'm so sorry. If you hop in on the YouTubes or the any of the other spaces, then you can throw your comments in. There was one comment that I wanted to throw up on the screen here. Hopefully that it works. Because it goes back to what Sarah was talking about, taking care of my mother-in-law in palliative care at home, no IVs at the end, pain meds at home don't work. These poor kids and their parents, this is a true crime. Going back to the Rotary Flames house, the lack of respite care and the compromised care that kids, really, really sick kids are having to deal with. Sarah, I want to spend some time on the Brian Jean Rajan Sani, I guess we could call that a press conference, because I mean, there's a part of me that goes, I feel almost bad for Brian Jean. I don't, but I could if I tried really hard, maybe a little bit, because he stood up in front of the province, the internet, and said, this bill absolutely doesn't need any amendments. And less than 48 hours later, Danielle Smith came out and said, well, the bill needs some amendments. So was that her throwing her ex-leadership candidates under the bus? Was that poor internal communications? What do you make of it?
So last week, caucus was fed talking points. You know, there's talking points that came out after the bill came out, and then they went along with the talking points. Like when I was watching Brian, I could tell that Brian was, you know, following a script. So we need to understand that the government right now is in, so, you know, the duck on top of the water looks fine, but under is like, you know, pedaling and, you know, just trying to swim, and we're not seeing all the troubles that is underwater right now. Like I said earlier, they're really good at containing and not, and showing like a very straight face, even if everybody's freaking out. Sorry, I just saw that. So, but you know, they were provided with some talking points. They did their job. Then the public continued to disagree with the talking points, and the public was like, in the media did a lot of work this week and being like, no. And every single scholars really, like, you know, Law Twitter carried a lot of water this week, and, you know, we got to give them props for that. But you need to, there's some stuff going on in the background, and they're really trying to make it seem like everything that happened to the days prior to Danielle Smith saying that there's going to be amendments, it's like if nothing happened. We don't talk about it anymore. Like, we talk about it today because we're going through the whole week, but nobody's talking about Brian Jean anymore. Nobody's talking about Rajan Sani anymore. Everybody's talking about, well, some people do, but it's not big in the news, right? But, you know, Danielle Smith really trying to do a pivot on their messaging today. And we're going to give them that. She's trying to make it seem like, well, yeah, no, it's not a big deal. You know, we gave you the worst option. We're going to soften it up. Everything's really going to run the corner. Isn't that, you know, oh, well, we didn't read it like that. This is really not what we meant. Again, I was not in the room when they made the decision, when they were presented the bill, so I cannot tell. But there's a lot of people that disagreed with, you know, and what they give to Sonny and Jean this week were talking points, and it happens in every single caucus. I'm not taking their defense. I'm just saying they were fed a little fact sheet, and then Madhu threw some more on top, and then we got the flow chart, and then everything imploded because everything is more clear with the flow chart.
My question is, like, and especially Jean, I mean, I've never met the man. I've been yelled at by his campaign manager, but I've never met Brian Jean. I would think that somebody who, like, is there no conversation that's happening? Or, I mean, obviously there is now, but was there no conversation that was happening beforehand where it was like, I threw the question out to the Twitter machine a little while ago, where I was like, hey, does anybody know of any like constitutional scholars or legal experts that are like, oh, it's not that bad? And the Premier of Alberta, using the resources of her government and her party, was able to find one and then a lawyer who represented the convoy. So do with that what you will. You know, like, if I was an MLA and I was paying any attention to social media, if I was a minister and I was paying any attention to social media or conventional media, because Lord knows there was no shortage of articles written, I feel like I would be saying, hey, there's a lot of really smart people who seem deeply, deeply concerned about this. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be the guy to stand up and say, it's perfect. No changes, no notes. Let's go. Like, I have such a hard time wrapping my head around how that's a thing that happens. And it's not like Brian Jean's a political neophyte. He's been an MLA, leader of an opposition party. He's been an MP. One would think
he's a minister now. That's different.
Right. So more's the point, though.
Like, I know.
One would hope that you would get, you know, ministerial folks, they choose on the basis of, I don't know, baseline competence, and not just, hey, we should do an Archie comic. I just like.
Oh my God. Fuck.
You're never going to not be able to see him as Archie now. You're welcome for that. Which begs the question, which one's Jughead?
I know Brian personally. He's always been super kind to me. And also people will start screaming, but everybody has different relationships with everyone. But I don't know what happened. Like, I honestly do not know how they... I think I'm... They really... So...
Okay, well, you formulate your thoughts. I want to throw another comment up here real quick this comes back to my rant that I did earlier in the show. The media did their job well by making the Smith government backpedal. This is why having a strong fifth estate, media. This is why having strong journalists and competent journalists is so important, because it was a fire hose of, well, that smells like bullshit. From the launch of day one, from credible media sources. I have, you know, there's lots of podcasts and I don't know, whatever the hell we are now, that say things, but we do not, the breakdown does not carry the same weight as CBC or CTV or Global or...
you make it to Hansard though.
You know, I don't want to brag, but we made it to the, we got read into evidence in the emergency commission thinger that they did, that whole federal hearing they did about the convoy, the breakdown made it into there. So, you know.
Yeah. But no,
which I can't stop laughing at, but go ahead.
I think that they were hoping. So they should have maintained one line of messaging only. And there was no really any line of messaging until like Thursday. It was Mr. Maddie was tweeting stuff and it was a gong show. Like, I've never seen a bill launch. Like, and that's their main bill too, right? And I've never seen a bill launch so uncontrolled. And with a very, very bad press conference after that threw more oil on the fire. And their journalists doing their job and taking everybody to account, asking questions, taking names, keeping the receipts. And then they kind of shuffled, they reorganized, and they decided to take one line of messaging. And then by Saturday, it's like, oh, shit. Everything is burning down. We're going to lose this. No, we're going to pivot. So it's all about telling your story, guys. It's all about how you express your message, how you tell your story, how you introduce something. Because if the media would have not paid attention to that bill, what would have happened?
That's scary, is what that is. That's straight up scary.
It's concerning. And then we're hearing, you know, it's, I just feel bad because there's bureaucrats that wrote. So here's the thing. There's bureaucrats. There's the executive council that wrote that bill. So during the leadership campaign, you meet at some point with executive council and they do prepare certain laws for each candidate. So they get ready before the election happens. So they can start, the machine can start as soon as the new premier is in place. So, you know, I know the people working in the bureaucracy in the background on that. And I'm really trying to understand how that bill came to life. Some people are saying there was like three options presented to them. They pick one. Some people are like, well, they never, you know, they never really thought that it would gain so much traction. They probably thought that maybe they were able to push back on the journalists. But at the end of the day, the pushback was so strong that they had to adapt. And we'll give them that. They adapted. We're going to see with the amendments this week. They pivoted all right. We'll give them that. But it shouldn't be that hard.
So here's my question with the pivot. And I'll ask both of you this. Don, you can go first. You know, there's stories, there's historical examples of big boats that have been headed in a direction, and then somebody realized, ruh-roh, iceberg ahead, and they tried to turn. Did the UCP, the good ship UCP, turn in time? Or have they scraped a huge hull? And Don, I'm going to go to you first here.
Well, I think in your analogy, the UCP is the iceberg and not the boat. If that makes any sense, you know, it's just the, what are they doing? You know, like I say, I'm trying to remain unbiased, but it's so hard to do. I'd like to see them be better, but they're caving to the worst aspects of the party. And I think that's what's happened. What happens in a polarized society is you let the unreasonable voices govern what the party's going to do, because you've pushed yourself right to the edge, and on the edge is where all the zealous people are that aren't thinking rationally. They're emotional thinkers. They're not thinking with their empathy. They're not thinking with compassion, and they're not thinking about the welfare of the other side. And I think if either party chose to embrace their humanity and just talk to people like people, you know, I think Albertans are a lot better than either party is treating them. And I think if they give Albertans the opportunity to identify and embrace with a party that's, you know, willing to look at them and care about them and talk to them like human beings, that party would win. And that's really all I can say on that topic.
Okay. We got a couple folks weighing in the comments. CJ says, no, they hit the iceberg. Jess says they rolled the dice and lost. So it seems like the consensus is didn't go so great. But Sarah Biggs, we've said it before. I imagine that we're going to say it again before we get to May. Fingers crossed for May. I keep hearing more and more that there is a firmer up commitment for May. I so desperately simultaneously hope so and afraid. They did nominate a candidate in Calgary Elbow, not for a by-election though. So Sarah Biggs, did they hit the iceberg? Did they turn in time? What's happening to Leo?
The door was not big enough.
The door wasn't big enough? Oh.
Well,
took me a second. I hate that movie.
Yeah. So funny story about that movie. That movie came out in 98 when Quebec was out of electricity for like a month. And our house didn't have any electricity, but the mall did. So we went to watch that movie like 9 times.
I'm sorry.
And, you know, they hit the iceberg, they reversed, they tried to patch it. Everybody's on the door right now, and everybody's trying to swim their way away from that. We're going to see what's going to happen. I am hoping that the amendments will be reasonable and will be reflecting what has been communicated for the past week, because they cannot handle come crisis, overcome crisis, overcome crisis. It is exhausting, like I said earlier. You can't be in reactive mode all the time. You just can't. You just can't. So we're going to see what's going to happen. I'm really hoping that that there's people in caucus fighting right now for amendments. I know there are some. And I'm really hoping that, that girl from Quebec says, if you want, I understand the essence of the bill. I understand that they're trying to, really assert their position. And I understand the essence, but the way they're doing it, that ain't it. It's not what should be done. There's other ways. You want to assert your position, open an office in Ottawa and have people connecting with PMO every single day. You want to, have good relations with good relationship with Quebec, open an office in Quebec, go try to tell the oil and gas story and try. That's the thing. We have a storytelling problem and a whole lot of misunderstanding. So once, whomever's in government is going to be able to see that. But they're on the door. They're on the door.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're going to get an election in May. Otherwise, the $100 payments would have been for 8 months instead of 6 months.
Interesting thought. I mean, it certainly seems to be one of the conversations that keeps coming back and keeps coming back and keeps coming back. I'm going to try one more thing because we've got Lynn who has requested to speak on the Twitter spaces. And I love when Lynn has thoughts to share. So I'm gonna cross my fingers and hope that Twitter, reboots or something, and maybe we can get Lynn speaking. Lynn, what's going on tonight?
Hi guys, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi. So as a constituent of Brian Jean's, I'm not gonna say much about that. But I think we need to bring it back to Don's point. We need to be more empathetic. We need to have more humility. And as far as I'm concerned, with the families that we adopt at Christmas in our program that have 3 and 4 kids that will get this money, Sarah, do not vote.
Yeah.
So I'm happy for them. But what is that going to bring to the party? I'm just heartbroken right now about these kids. Like, I'm in tears because I took care of my mother-in-law. I know what palliative care is. And I know what, when it gets to the point where the caregiver cannot protect the person from the pain and they need to go to the hospital. These kids are being sent home with parents who are already hurting. Like, this was my mother-in-law. I loved her, but she wasn't my child. I agree with Don, and he needs to put this story out because this is bigger than the Sovereignty Act, as far as I'm concerned.
We could bring also a point. Oh, they just nominated Angela Wood for St. Albert. Sorry. So I think we can bring, there's some people. Is Bill 1 a distraction? Or was it really, there's a lot of things that we could discuss and bring to the table, it could be seen as a distraction the way they have put it out. It could be, you know, yes, they're 100% trying to avoid talking about healthcare right now, especially the crisis that we're dealing with our children's hospital. Like, the Stollery is full, Alberta Children's Hospital in Calgary is full, the Rotary House is closed, all staff is being diverted. The unions met 2 weeks ago to try to see if you know, some other staffers from other hospitals would be willing to go help in different departments because everybody's exhausted. You know, I really wish I had the right answer for you, Lynn. I really do. But
don't get me wrong, Sarah. I'm not, my focus is not off the Sovereignty Act. I tried to call Brian Jean's office after his ridiculous press conference. For some reason, they went on vacation. So I called Tanny Yao's office and talked to my friend Vaughn Jessam, who informed me that Tanny was not my representative. I said, listen, Vaughn, if I have to call every MLA in Alberta, I will do that because I'm an Albertan. So it doesn't matter that Brian Jean does not just speak for me. Everyone, including every MLA in Alberta, belongs to me as far as I'm concerned, which is why I will call Shane Getson's office again on Monday.
I would recommend sending emails, CC everybody around your region, plus the other MLAs from the opposition that has more, and, you know, they're more traceable as well. And I strongly think that they have a bigger impact than just phone calls, because the staff there, you know, the staff that answers, they're getting inundated right now, and it is not their fault. They are legislative
assembly. And I'm not reading
No, I know. But they are legislative assembly employees. But we need to remember that as well. They are nonpartisan. They are doing their work. And yes, somebody could be on vacation, because staff in those LOA office are not partisan.
No,
there's nothing partisan. So yeah, somebody, you know, the only worker in Branch's office could be, I'm not trying to defend them, but I would say an email would make more impact. They're exhausted.
And I agree with you. And I am never rude to them when I call the premier, the health minister, whoever.
No, I'm not implying that at all. It's just they're tired, because the whole thing's been a tire fire for the past 2 months. They're exhausted.
Okay, so emails are better. I gotcha.
Emails are better.
Okay.
There we go.
Thank you very much, guys.
I'm glad we were able to get you on, and I'm going to try one more time with Ziad, and then we're coming up to the final thoughts part of the show. So I'm going to ask Dawn and Sarah to think about what you want to throw to the ether. Ziad, six times the charm.
Let's try again. Can you hear me this time?
There we go.
Perfect.
All done. Excellent. So, yeah, I have a couple of notes that I made during the show, and I'll just kind of quickly blow through them. Regarding Shane Getson, do you remember two elections ago, federal election, when Elizabeth May looked at the conservative leader, the Saskatchewan guy, and said...
Andrew Scheer,
that's right. And she pointed at Maxime Bernier and said, he says what you think. And so when I look at Shane Getson, he's saying what Daniel Smith is thinking. Getson is convoy, Coutts, JCCF, who Daniel Smith threw at least $60,000 towards, is convoy and Coutts. Smith is relying on the convoy Coutts constituency, and you know, he was speaking from notes. You know, he's her crowd.
Sorry, I'm going to disagree with that. There's no way any government employee or staff would approve that. There's no way. He's not talking from notes on that.
He was. Right. He was taking for notes. If you look at the video, he had notes in front of him. I'm not his saying they were notes. Provided to him by
his notes
by the communication staff. I'm just saying he's accountable for his own behavior.
I know, but it's his notes. And if, you know, we could FOIP it and see if that was written by communication staff. But I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
But I'm not saying that the communication staff approved it. I'm saying he's accountable for what he said, and I'm criticizing the lack of pushback from Smith.
No, I know, but the point that sticks with me is that you said he was talking from notes.
Yeah, he was.
But that would imply that the government would have written notes. That.
They weren't off-the-cuff comments that he was making.
I'd love to see that sheet. I think they were off-the-cuff. We're going to have to disagree on that one.
I think we're disagreeing on notes. Yeah. He was speaking from notes. We're disagreeing on whose notes there were. The second thing I wanted to touch on quickly is I put it up in the nest, which is that Léger did a poll immediately after Smith became the UCP leader. And the percentage of who would be the better premier between Notley and Smith right after she became the leader, and in this latest poll released this week, was the same, around 36 to 23. So it says two things. One is that she hasn't, despite having, you know, the bully pulpit for the last month, she hasn't made an advantage. But the other thing it also says is, despite screwing up a lot, the NDP hasn't managed to take her down. And I don't hear anyone else speaking, so I think, Sarah, you and I are speaking over each other.
No, Sarah's writing some notes, I think. Did you have any other points that you wanted to throw in there yet?
Yeah. Regarding Aish, that we shouldn't be stigmatizing people, we should be taking care of the vulnerable. That's not the way the pandemic has been run. Whether you look at Great Barrington defecation or the urgency of normal or the way that, especially in 2022, our government has been handling the pandemic, it's been about letting the elderly die. It's been about letting the marginalized and the people with immune suppressing conditions or disabilities get sick and die. And so not funding Aish properly or playing games about the Aish state in order to make quarter end look better on the government fiscal books is consistent with that. And the final point I want to make is agreeing with Sarah, which is that the NDP must lay out a platform. They must show that they're an alternative. That's something that they have to do as a as an opposition. It's not just oppose, but lay out the alternative. And when it comes to Bill 1, not supporting any amendments is a strategic mistake. If they support amendments that use the UCP's words against them, if the UCP words are, you know, the bill really means this, and we want to clarify the bill to say this, then what they should be doing is supporting amendments that change the bill to match what the UCP claims they want out of the final Sovereignty Act. So those are my points. I'm not sure how well I was heard. Elon Musk has molded Twitter in his own image, unreliable, disappointing, and obnoxious. Thanks, Rick.
Yeah, Zai had sent me a screenshot earlier, and it was really quite remarkable how much has changed and how things weren't available. So that's super fun. But I'm going to go to, because we are now at the 2-hour mark, and I try really, really hard not to do that. But it's been a spirited discussion tonight. I'm going to go to Don. Any final thoughts? Anything you should be watching out for?
Here's my notes. Anyway, it's been a very good conversation, and I've really enjoyed the display of kindness and empathy and the passion that people have. I think if that is allowed to come out of the NDP, then the election's a lock. As far as the disabled community goes, there's a lot of work to be done. I'd like to see a reduction of costs next. Because when you stack money on top of the problem, say housing is a shortage, that money just goes on the first to a landlord and gone. We need to increase the amount of housing so that, you know, rents cost less for everyone. I have compassion for everyone in society, and I know everybody's getting squeezed. I want to see my community reach a state of well-being. And Sarah is absolutely right. We need a standard. We shouldn't be comparing ourselves to people that are substandard and say, woohoo, we got a D minus and because everybody else got an F. You know, we've got to be better. And that would be my final statement on Aish. As far as politics works right now, the NDP's got to suck it up and stop being polarized and realize that they're not getting elected for themselves. They're getting elected for the welfare of Albertans. Albertans are really counting on them to be a good governance. They need to get elected for everybody that's vulnerable, everybody that's in need. You know, they can't play the strategic game of bullshit, or they're just being all tactical and they're not putting their empathy out there, their heart out there, their kindness out there. If Sarah did a commercial just based on what she had to say tonight, you know, there's no doubt I'd vote for the NDP. And I consider myself a small C conservative. I believe that true conservatives like Stelmach they believe in caring and fairness and all the things that make a person a good person. But that's sort of gone from the UCP. It's got libertarians and neoliberals and people that are more concerned with money than fair play. So it's really up to the NDP to, you know, bring themselves forward, be the party of the people, do good by people. And yeah, if Sarah wants to run, that's fine. if she can dare put herself out there. So, and Nate too.
Oh, not with a gun to my head. Not with a gun to my head.
Yeah, well, you know, this conversation could really be called the Humanity Network. You know, it's just
I much better doing things in the background like I do right now.
Yeah.
You don't want to hear me yell in the legislature.
Sure, it's, I do.
No. Yeah. But thank you.
All right, yeah. Sarah. What, any final thoughts? What are you watching for this week? I know we're all going to be watching on the amendments.
It's going to be a busy week. It's going to be very busy. So it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen. I'm hoping the amendments would be presented on Tuesday, so that would give them 3 days to debate. And we're going to have to pay attention to... what's going to be happening on the sidelines. I'm going to be watching healthcare with a lot of interest. I'm going to be curious. I'm going to keep an eye on the new CMOH to see what their next move is going to be. You know, like, it's going to be busy, and it's easier being angry than trying to understand what's going on in people's mind. And like Don says, you know, and it takes a lot of compassion for that. And sometimes I'm getting really angry, but I'm seeing what's happening in the background. I understand what's happening. Lot, you know, not everybody has, you know, what Nate can see or what I can see in the background. I do what I do for work. But we're going to see what's going to be happening. But we need to, you know, I'm a small C conservative too. Heck, I ran a conservative campaign this summer. And I was called a communist because I wanted to increase age, because I was writing policies about healthcare, about education, and everything in between. I've been called a communist like 100 times this summer.
Was it shame?
I think he should probably replace the N in his name with an M. Call him Shame from now on.
I can pass that one up.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to see. There's a lot of stakes right now, and I think that I hope people adjust, because we are in a two-party system right now, and we can't forget that. We cannot settle for the less worse. We need to settle for the best.
Yeah.
So if Ms. Smith comes in with really good policies, even if her personal opinion is out there, if she comes in with good, sensible, smart policies and try not to cause havoc, guys, the NDP's done. That's what they need to realize. It's a two-party. There's no vote splitting. It's not a thing. But, you know, what's going to be interesting, I'm going to keep an eye on Take Back Alberta, too. Because she walked back two of her policies now. The two major ones that were appealing to that 40% of the party, so 50,000 people in the province.
It's going to be fascinating to see because she has walked back. There was a fun little exchange that happened on the Breakdown's Twitter today where somebody, we made a joke about the fact that she had said, oh yeah, no, there have to be amendments. And somebody with a relatively new Twitter account said, oh, show me where. And so we posted the video and you could hear, I'm not sure where exactly in Alberta I heard the exploding head, but I heard an exploding head. But there's people who have put a staggering amount of faith in the idea that Danielle Smith is some sort of great crusader. And as she starts to have to walk back those policies in order to have any kind of headway heading into May, I think that we're going to see some simultaneously fascinating, but also really dangerous reactions from people.
Well, if you wouldn't, there are some people that work in the back for her that accepted to go work. You'd be surprised how reasonable they are. You would be extremely, extremely, extremely surprised. They're normal people. I'm like, I'm not normal, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see because I think that a lot of people in the party right now understand that the Take Back Alberta reality is not Alberta's reality.
Yeah.
And that Danielle needs more than 50,000 votes to win that election. Yeah. She needs a million.
I've talked to some of those reasonable voices in the UCP, but I don't know if the UCP will be as malleable because the nature of their supporters as the NDP will be. I think the NDP supporter is a supporter with empathy, and the UCP supporter is a supporter with anger.
And, it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen, but the executive have their handful for the next few weeks, that's for sure.
But there is definitely too much anger in this world right now, and I think people are really tired of it.
Yeah.
Facebook generates anger, Twitter generates anger.
And oh, man, you should see the emails I'm getting. It's very cute. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've experienced some pretty horrid things sent my way for trying to be a good person.
Yeah.
You know, people will always find a way to object to
always
people that are trying to do good for this world.
Yeah. So, yeah.
We're up on the cross.
All right, I'm gonna go ahead and clear the room. I'm gonna make a couple of small announcements before I do the standard room clearing speech. First of all, if you're one of the Breakdown's Patreon supporters, I just want to say first of all, thank you so much. But also B, I want to say you should really log into the Patreon page because we're doing a little thing there for our Patreon supporters, little Christmas thing. Worth looking at, not saying, just saying. But one of the other things that we always want to plug is, before I do the plug, one other little update. We're going to go at 7 on Wednesday. We're going to try starting at 7 instead of 8 o'clock to see if we can get things done a little bit, not 10 o'clock, 10:30 at night-ish, because there's stuff that needs to happen. So we're going to be running at 7 o'clock on Wednesday, but we will be back on Wednesday. Sarah Biggs will be joining us for sure. Again, we're going to look at maybe getting a couple of other voices in the conversation too, maybe rotating some folks through. We'll see how it works. But in the meantime, if you appreciate the kind of content that we're trying to produce here at The Breakdown, we would love nothing more than if you considered signing up to be one of our Patreon sponsors at www.patreon.com/TheBreakdownAB, where for the price of a fancy little muffin or a fancy little coffee, perhaps a fancy cookie, you can help us continue to produce the kind of content that we do and hopefully continue to troubleshoot some of the gremlins that we
have a muffin
that we've been trying to troubleshoot over the last little while. And we understand, obviously, tonight we have some folks in the audience, as we do. It's actually a real privilege. We have folks that tune in who do not have the financial means to support us at The Breakdown. We totally get that. That's super cool. Throw a like, throw a subscribe, tell your friends to subscribe. Smash that subscribe button, as the kids say, I'm told. I want to say a big thank you to everybody in the Twitter spaces. Guys, I don't know what happened tonight. I don't know why people couldn't be added and why the audio was all weird. I'm just going to blame Elon. I mean, for the longest time, he was just blowing up rockets. So it makes sense that he would be blowing up Twitter for a bit too. I want to say a big thank you to everybody who's been watching on the live stream, especially all of the comments with the chat. We're going to continue to try to get better at highlighting some of those comments, because you guys had some really insightful and some funny things to say. So please keep doing that. We will see you on Wednesday, 7 o'clock. God willing, there's no need for an emergency episode this week because I don't want to do one. But
I don't have time. I'm too busy.
No emergency episodes then. As always, big thank you to Sarah. Dawn, thank you so much for being willing to come on and share your thoughts and perspectives tonight.
Thank you, Dawn.
Yeah, and especially the age conversation, because, you know, it is, you've said it yourself before, we've seen it so many times before, where people have said, oh, look, we did the bare minimum, and the reality is we can do a whole lot better than the bare minimum. So thanks for that, Dawn. And with that, I'm going to say, everybody have a great week. Have good sleeps tonight. Take care of yourselves and keep the conversation going. Mm-hmm.